It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, Industry Editor at Search ERP. Migrating to S4HANA, SAP's newest ERP, is no easy task. For one thing, the multi-tenant SaaS version differs significantly from the on-premises and private cloud versions. With the 2027 deadline looming, how can SAP users choose the right one and get the benefits of S4HANA without disrupting their business? In this podcast, executives at three of SAP's biggest S4HANA implementation partners share their advice and experiences. We'll start with Jesse Rothermel of EY, then hear from Chip Kleinhexel of Deloitte and Keith Costello of IBM. Jesse, first of all, thank you for joining me today. I thought we might just jump in with asking, what is it that motivates companies to move to S4HANA?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a couple different things right now. And it's starting to evolve a little bit, right? When S4 was first out, you know, I feel like what we saw over the first 3 to 4 years where S4 was a realistic option was companies who had some kind of real immediate burning platform. And that came in really in two different forms. Either one, the house was falling, you know, the house was burning down, right? And they needed to get out of it. And meaning, you know, legacy architecture or infrastructure that just didn't work anymore, disparate systems that were really just not serving the day-to-day needs of the business for one reason or the other. Those were driving some of the initial customers. The other big thing that we saw was merger and acquisition activity. Either, you know, historical M&A activity that had resulted in a number of different ERP systems in the back end, and it just made sense to consolidate and move with the new SAP solution, or companies that were getting spun off and needed to start something new. That's what we saw for the first, you know, like I say, 3 to 4 years. What we're starting to see now is more thoughtful long-term planning around S4. With a lot of companies, I think, having success in moving forward with S4 when they think through what their corporate strategies are long-term. What are they trying to be? You know, are they trying to be a serial acquirer of companies? Are they trying to prep themselves to be divested at some point? Are they reinventing the way they do business through, you know, subscription-based models or different kinds of billing, et cetera? When they're looking to reinvent their business, that's when they've found the ability to align to S4 and actually justify the cost, I say, would be the best way to put it.
How is it that they think that S4HANA is going to help them get there? What do they think it's going to do for them to help meet some of those goals?
Well, I think, one, they see an ability to start over a bit, right? So I think, you know, from an S4 perspective, I think everyone is enticed and has been educated on, you know, the business benefits of having, you know, an ERP solution that's holistically, you know, in memory and very fast and data is more accessible and all of that. But I think there's also been a change in the mantra of SAP over the past, I don't know, decade that I've been involved, multiple decades with SAP around moving to standard. And I think S4 as a solution has a much better, I'll say, framework or infrastructure behind it to actually have companies implement it with standard functionality out of the box as much as possible versus, you know, the legacy approach of just customizing the heck out of it, right? I think that's become a big deal because I think, you know, quite frankly, a lot of the back office capabilities that SAP S4 provides aren't always the most exciting, right, to the business and getting businesses excited and how's that really going to help me achieve the future? Well, the bottom line is it's still runs a large portion of business process and back office activity. And to be able to standardize even on that, simplify your processes, and then really hone in on the areas that create value, I think is part of the story that it provides. And for a lot of big enterprises, David, you know, SAP, there's a lot of other cloud solutions out there competing with SAP right now. SAP is the only one that can fit the needs of a lot of those corporations still.
Is that because just they're better with the sort of enterprise class needs? As opposed to SMBs, or I'm curious why that would be.
I think it's more the enterprise class needs, I guess, is one way to put it. The ability to reflect that a company's got a huge, globally diverse set of businesses and business operations, reflect those kind of equally and have the ability to configure something one way or the other, right? And I don't mean customize, I just mean getting configured the system the way for certain businesses to run. I've not seen still today an ERP solution that can handle that kind of complexity.
If it is a rise with SAP engagement, what does EY do in that kind of engagement versus one that doesn't involve RISE? How does your role change in that situation?
I would say, you know, a couple different things. One is very specifically in the infrastructure and architecture services space. We won't do any of the, I call it the tech arc. I grew up in SAP in the basis area long ago, right? So the basis work, right? The actual like gathering requirements for and building the different systems required for the project, we won't do that at all. SAP will do all of that. And that includes sizing them up, getting them implemented, building a development, a test, and a production system, and all the other systems that are required, doing a lot of the technical configuration of the system so that it's ready to connect and talk to other systems, et cetera. That whole piece, which used to be, you know, it was big for a lot of vendors for a long time. Pieces of it became commodity, I think, over time. SAP's now they own that in the RISE deal, right, end to end. There's a little bit of gray space that we work together with around integration, technical integration scenarios, talking to other systems that we have to solve for a little bit differently on every client. But for the most part, that piece is gone. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the solution itself, because it's a private cloud solution and has more frequent releases than what the on-premise solution did before and more limitations around what you can customize, et cetera, I have found that the skill set that we need to bring to the table on those projects is actually more business process heavy and less technology heavy, right? So it's a lot more education to the different clients we deal with on in terms of here's what RISE is built on fundamentally from a business process perspective, and here's why those business processes are acceptable, standard across either your sector or across all sectors, and why you should be able to fit your organization to those processes rather than customizing or, you know, whatever you want to call it, developing the heck out of the system to make it do what you want. That's changed. And I will say those RISE deals and the lack of ability or reduced ability to customize, which is very intentional, right, puts even more emphasis on that change management piece as well. And so we've had to bring even more of that to the table because you're basically saying, hey, here's the solution, take it as close to standard as you can. And by the way, now everyone needs to run this way.
So RISE is essentially a private cloud option.
Yeah, I there's different solutions and options, and I wouldn't want to be the one to speak to all of them, but yes, the scenario where, you know, you're going out and work, you know, they're working with a provider, you know, one of the big ones, Microsoft, et cetera, and setting up still a specific instance on the cloud for you and then hosting it. Mm-hmm. In my mind, that's still a private cloud scenario, right? They clearly also have a single tenant cloud scenario. Let's put it that way. Versus SAP still does offer also, like many other cloud companies, a true public multi-tenant cloud option. That option matured well beyond I ever imagined in the last, I'll say, 5 years, mm-hmm. but still is targeted at either one, smaller companies who can really accept a solution completely out of the box and deal with other companies' maintenance windows and all of that fun, right? Mm-hmm. Or two-tiered scenarios, which has become interesting as well, where a company's got a legacy SAP ECC or even a private cloud S4 instance, and they want to set up SAP quickly for a new market, simple new business unit, something around an acquisition. That multi-tenant model can become pretty compelling if you do the financials on it.
How do you folks at EY try to characterize or explain the different flavors of S/4HANA Cloud, leaving aside on-premises S/4HANA, which is a big thing too? What are the key terms that you use to help them sort of understand the difference? Because I do think there is some confusion.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think with almost every client we've had, you know, we will either have a conversation or a joint conversation with SAP to try to clarify some of the principles. And I think it's not so much around SAP's marketing strategy where the confusion comes. It's because of a lot of the experience and expectations of legacy SAP customers, mm-hmm. and not understanding what it means, because they had, you know, for a long time, everyone said, you know, in the SAP space, the move was cloud, cloud, cloud meant, hey, put your infrastructure on hyperscalers, right? That was the move, right? It was still an on-premise solution in terms of it was yours and yours only, and you still hosted it, but it was server-wise out there and on the cloud, right? Mm-hmm. The processing power. And I think that became the mantra in a lot of people's heads. And then people started, our customers started seeing real cloud solutions out there, like the, you know, the Workdays and the ServiceNows and, you know, that kind of a mindset, and said, is that what SAP means by cloud? Is that the same thing or is it not the same thing? And SAP does have truly comparable full public cloud solutions like we talked about, but for the most part, the clients that we're talking to are looking for that middle ground. So they say, well, what does private cloud really mean? The way I explain it in the simplest terms is you still own your instance, meaning it's yours. It's only got your data in it. It is a single database with your data as a client.
Right.
There's no tables that are shared with you and somebody else, but that instance is totally built and maintained by somebody else. Mm-hmm. That's the private cloud perspective of it. So, you know, they're the ones who deal with the hyperscaler, SAP, right? They own that relationship. They build your actual system for you, and you're just using it. You're using it to store your data and run your transactions. I think that's the simplest way to put it. And they say, well, what's the downside? Why would I ever want to go that route as opposed to the traditional on-prem or pick my own hyperscaler option? And it's really the maintenance of the solution and the introduction of new capabilities, right, which they weren't able to do before. By keeping to some kind of a standard and hosting that all centrally, they've got the ability to, you know, actually provide new capabilities much faster than they ever did before to the software package.
It does seem like S/4HANA on-premises is still the most fully functional version in terms of how it compares to Business Suite and the kinds of the number of modules it has and what they do. How do you folks at EY explain the difference between on-premises S/4HANA and the others? And I know the code is the same. I think if it's not multi-tenant SaaS, then it's the same code base. But like, how do you walk them through that in terms of figuring out that maybe they need to go for the on-premises version? They can't go for any kind of cloud version, or especially the multi-tenant SaaS version.
Yeah, I mean, there's not an easy way to answer it, David. And the reason why I say that is because the answer is a little bit different based on different modules of SAP and functionality, right? I think that if you're a purely or primarily finance focused customer, there isn't a lot of difference anymore, right? I think when you get down to manufacturing and integration with shop floor solutions, that's where I think there's still some maturity to be had in the on-prem versus the cloud version, which is, you know, why you see some of the multi-tier decentralized solutions that exist today around EWM and some of the other, like, closer to the warehouse or shop floor level solutions, staying on some level of their old on-prem and then having a cloud version in the middle. Outside of that, I think that we typically will try to scope the client pretty quickly and understand which modules they may use, and then do a level of on-prem versus, you know, RISE or private cloud comparison, just because it gets so specific for what functions they're using. That's the simplest way I could put it. I don't know that we have a precise playbook that says, hey, client A, here's what it means to you, or client B, here's what it means to you, other than trying to kind of scope it out, go through it, and make sure everything fits together.
It might be really hard to generalize, but are there a few typical approaches to S/4HANA migration that you find companies doing, whether it be a particular methodology or maybe a Deloitte service offering, or even an SAP service offering such as RISE with SAP, that is the most common that people tend to use to get there?
Yes. So I'll start with two, and then there's variants off of that, right? So first two, and many people have probably heard this, you're seeing either greenfield or brownfield. Greenfield meaning starting from scratch, building an entirely new S/4HANA environment. Brownfield meaning taking a prior ECC environment and going through an upgrade process to get to S/4, right? That at the highest level. When it comes to a greenfield, what we Deloitte offer is we have industry solutions pre-configured based on industry requirements we see, so that companies aren't starting from scratch. They're starting based on what we've seen as best practices in the industry, and then are able to use that as the starting point to then configure and design and move forward, right? And we've also built in their capabilities to do automated configuration based on the designs we do. We've built in tools to do automated testing to accelerate how that program can be executed. From a brownfield standpoint, we've created an offering we call Selective Transformation. Selective Transformation meaning when we go through that upgrade process, we've built automated capabilities built on top of what SAP is already providing, allowing us to make decisions around, is there certain code that was created in the old version that we want to move over? Or is there code that we don't want to bring into this new environment? What decisions do we want to do around data? And how do we want to bring that data over, right? So it's that transformation where we can be selective around business value and still have a business transformation lens on it while still going through more of a technical upgrade path. And then I'd say we're seeing variants of that, right? SAP providing things like central finance, where somebody wants to take a next step, but they're not ready to move all of their ECC environments, but they want to have an S4 layer for finance capabilities. So we're seeing SAP central finance be implemented quite a bit, especially for large global companies with multiple SAP environments underneath. And we created an offering called Kinetic Finance Startup, which allows us to take a client's legacy SAP environment, extract their data, and extract their config, harmonize it through artificial intelligence and machine learning capabilities we've leveraged to then auto-configure and auto-convert over their data. So we're starting a program with a configured data-loaded environment right off the bat, and then able to design and build with that as the reference point. That's been a game changer for us, both in terms of how we can accelerate the delivery and achieve high quality for our clients. And we're seeing a lot of central finance implementations going out there in the landscape.
Can we dwell on that central finance thing a little bit? I've heard of this for a number of years now. It seems like it's often the first way or the entry point into S/4HANA for companies. Is that because accounting is so central and that it's so feasible to kind of centralize or to move that piece over and keep maybe the others on premises? Or I'm just curious, why is it that so many companies go with central finance first?
So I'd say a couple reasons, and you're spot on. It is a common way that we're seeing people move to S4 because they can be a bit more risk averse, right? If you think about a lot of times where have companies had to tailor their systems, it's less in the finance space. They're able to keep that pretty standard. More often they have to tailor their systems in how they're managing orders, how they're interacting with customers, how they're interacting with vendors and executing procurement. And so that the fact that the finance processes are typically more standard is more risk-averse way of saying, hey, I'm going to transition that over first. Second thing is from a value standpoint, many companies, especially global, who may have multiple SAP environments for different regions across the globe, still have a desire to be able to see their financials in one consistent way, right? And so they're saying, hey, I can move to S4. I get the value of seeing my financials in one consistent way, but I can mitigate the risk of maybe some of the nuances I've had to do within my order to cash and my procure to pay processes at these different regional levels by not having to impact that right off the bat, right? So it's a great way to kind of set that stage and then deploy a roadmap for how they want to get the rest of their business onto S4 later.
SAP seems to have put a big stake in the ground with RISE with SAP. For what kind of company is that the best way to go? When is that the best option versus maybe implementing some other way?
You're spot on. They put a big emphasis on it, and rightfully so, right? It was the right time for SAP to make a transition to have a subscription model that still provided flexibility in terms of private cloud versus public cloud. And so if you look at it, seeing companies who may not be ready for a full public cloud, but giving them that pathway to a cloud subscription option, key. Now, when it comes to our clients in terms of what decisioning they should make around that, you know, ultimately it still requires what's their business need. So when I talk to clients, I say, hey, there's a bit of a decision tree that we got to work through. Meaning at the end of the day, S4 is what they desire to go on. Well, now let's talk about how you want to deploy it. Is it, I still need my own data servers because I have strict requirements and I want to have that on site. Well, then maybe you still need to go on-prem, right? But is it, nope, I want to move to a more responsive environment, leveraging hyperscalers to manage my infrastructure, but I still want to have my own environment and want to have it in a more private nature. Well, I'm going to go that RISE pathway, the subscription model, private cloud. You know, you've got a private cloud model, which allows companies to have a little bit more flexibility in terms of how they want to tailor it to their client, but yet still putting it out on a cloud infrastructure. And then ultimately, there's the public cloud offering within Rise. Particularly, we're seeing it for companies maybe with a more finance-led type business, where they can be fit to standard. They don't need to tailor as many things. They can leverage that cloud model where, quite frankly, allows them to even further limit the requirements they have to be able to maintain, configure, sustain it, because it's truly coming even more pre-configured than anything else. And so oftentimes talking with clients, it's what are their needs? How do they need to approach it? If it's cloud, all right, then let's discuss how Rise works. How do you then fit within the Rise umbrella in terms of what your needs are there?
It does seem like the most fully functional version of S/4HANA is the on-premises version. What does Deloitte do to help clients figure out whether they need the on-premises version versus whether they can go to the cloud version that's the most different, which as I understand it is the multi-tenant SaaS, the S/4HANA cloud? How do you help them through that process?
On-premise, or I would say S/4HANA private cloud. That's the same code base, same capabilities, just difference in terms of, I would say one's providing more of an infrastructure as a service, the other one, you're responsible for your infrastructure. At the highest level, what we've created, and we've even walked this through with SAP, is a decision tree to really make the decision around on-prem, private cloud, public cloud. And what we do is we go through a series of questions in terms of, quite frankly, what's the flexibility they need and what are the functional capabilities they need? Because for the public cloud option, SAP is still rolling out their roadmap, right? They've started with what I refer to more as that finance-led type companies with a lot of the core finance processes, but they're still rolling out things around manufacturing, logistics, et cetera. And so first and foremost, it has to be a good fit, the SaaS public cloud does, to what that business and the scope of capabilities that they need. Second, then is within those scope of capabilities, what's their ability to actually fit to standard? Because that SaaS model, there's pros to this. You fit to standard, way less to maintain, a lot of value you can get out of that. But some companies just don't have that ability to do so. I work with a lot of distribution companies. Distribution companies, you are at the mercy often of your customer, which means you are then required to do a lot of customer specific requirements, enhancements, et cetera, which then sometimes can impact your ability to go to a true fit to standard type option like a multi-tenant SaaS solution would do. So we work through and say, okay, what are the scope of capabilities? Does that align to SAP and the roadmap they have for public cloud? Second is, what flexibility do you need to be able to tailor those and enhance those? And as you work through that, then really it starts to filter down to, okay, are you a good fit for SaaS or do you still need a private cloud option? And we're seeing a lot of companies also, it depends on, I would say, their kind of path and maturity for cloud. Some companies are fully ready for that. And they're saying, yep, we want fit to standard. We can transition there. We can go through the change in the adoption to get there. Other companies are pretty honest about also saying, we're not ready for that yet. We just have too many customer-specific, vendor-specific requirements that we would have to hash through that we wouldn't be able to fit in a fit-to-standard type model like a SaaS solution provides.
I'm interested in hearing what IBM is seeing from companies in terms of their motivation for going to S/4HANA. What drives them to that?
Okay. So I don't think that companies and our clients wake up in the morning and say, I think today we're going to move to S/4HANA. I don't think that's the way it happens. It's a process and it takes time. And most of these clients, although SAP continues to sign new clients every quarter and every year, most of these clients that are looking to make a move are making a move off of an older version of SAP. What's not driving them, I can tell you this, is the end of maintenance date. That rarely factors into their decision. Their decisions are being driven by strategic requirements in their business and other market factors that we've seen over the last 2 years that have been acute for most of our clients. We're continuously reading about the backlog in the supply chain. And this has created, at least for companies in consumer and in retail, in shipping and logistics and trucking, you name it, has created a moment in time for them to rethink the efficacy of their processes in particular and their insights into what's coming in their business more specifically. So, you know, there are market factors that often, you know, rattle our customers in such a way that they take a step back and say, what is going on here? Why didn't we anticipate this? They usually understand that there's some strategic capability that they have that isn't up to the task. And so that might be the processes that they have in anticipating buy side sensitivity in the market, et cetera. Let me take a step back and talk about the kinds of things that I'm seeing. There are clients who have come to the conclusion strategically that their business is going in a slightly different direction. If you use IBM as an example, about 2 years ago, with a new CEO and chairman, Arvind Krishna, he said, we're going to focus on two specific areas, hybrid cloud and AI. We're going to recast our go-to-market capabilities and our product generation capabilities and a whole bunch of other things around those two areas. We're really going to focus. Now, when a chairperson decides that, they've usually consulted with their board. They understand that this is going to take time. It's going to take a significant amount of investment. Ultimately, that investment happens in people. Do they have the right people to execute the change? Do they have the processes in place to support it? And what about the systems that underlie all of this, that make it all happen and automate it and with which you execute? This is where SAP S/4HANA comes into play, because many of our large clients, whether they're responding to things that they think they need to change in the way that they execute their demand signals that they're getting from the market and how they fulfill those, or they're acquiring another company, or they're, like we did just recently, spinning off 90,000 people and nearly $20 billion in revenue. I mean, that's a massive change in a company. So all of a sudden you're looking at your processes and you're looking at the people and how they execute the work, and you're realizing you've got to do some fundamental changes in order to continue to grow. And so that's when you start to think about, how do we leverage a new capability? S/4HANA does things differently than the older versions of SAP. It's taken functions and processes and consolidated a lot of them, right? And so, in fact, the data model is different than the old versions. And so you start to look at this and you start to understand, okay, how do we optimize what we do, leveraging S/4HANA as a capability? That's when clients, so they made strategic decisions at a C-level or a board level. Those decisions are driving change in the business. Then, and only then, do they start to look at the downstream impacts on systems. And what they find, if they're an existing SAP client, they find that the SAP systems, which have been revved in some case over decades, are now built for a business model that hasn't existed in a long time inside their company. And they've tweaked it here and they've added this and they've layered on transportation management from SAP because they want to optimize that too, and all this other stuff. And that's where they start to anticipate not just the what they do, but how. This whole notion of greenfield versus a hybrid approach, we call it rapid move, and how do they, because this notion of a brownfield upgrade, a technical upgrade, I don't know what that gets you. Mm-hmm. I mean, that delivers zero strategic value for a company. So the question is, how do they either leverage what they've done in the past? Because in some cases, in finance, maybe their processes are optimized and they don't need to materially change to support the new business model. They've already had to do that inside ECC, right? And so, because it's about compliance and reporting and so forth. So how do they move to the new structure? How do they get strategic advantage out of it? And it's more about what happens around S4, because it forces you to think about things a little differently. Or I should say more profoundly, a lot differently. And if you're going to implement it and you're going to do it out of the box. And if you're going to use something like RISE with SAP, which is a way to consume SAP the way that clients have been asking for years, then you've really got to take a step back and understand how do you implement this out of the box and not do what we've done in the past, which is spend half of your existing deployment budget on customization. That's gotten people nowhere. It's created a situation where they don't know, you know, when they make one change, it impacts a whole bunch of other things, and it makes keeping up to date and upgrading and leveraging new technology, or I should say new functionality from SAP, very, very expensive. So they don't want to, no one wants to be in that position. The least of all SAP, they don't want their clients in that position. They never wanted them in that position. That's just where they went because they used to deliver the source code with the product.
I'm interested in what you said earlier about them not really being motivated by the 2027 deadline and being more interested in these other things that they can do with S/4HANA. Does that mean that they don't think SAP is going to stick with the deadline, or I'm just wondering, like, why is it that the deadline for these folks doesn't hold much power for them?
It's not the top of mind concern for them, I would say. It's not about believing whether SAP will stick to the deadline or not. It's more about, you know, we've got a business to run. We already run on SAP. We run everything on SAP, and we're going to continue to run everything on SAP. The question is, what version? How does it support our strategic objectives, et cetera? And those concerns and conversations that are taking place with our clients are more important than a date, either 2027 or 2030, when extended maintenance runs, you know, is supposed to expire.
What are the biggest challenges they're likely to face? And maybe this varies depending on whether they're going to S/4HANA Cloud versus something else, but what tend to be the big challenges?
At a technical level, the big challenges are generally in technical debt that clients find. So SAP does not exist in a vacuum or on an island. It is highly integrated with other systems. And many of those systems that clients integrate with, they'll be the first to tell you they have, the people who built these systems don't even work at they're retired. Mm-hmm. You know, these are mission critical things. They might supply pricing information. They might handle logistics or testing. Who knows what they do? They all do different things, and there are lots of them. Mm-hmm. And typically those things need to be modernized. I'd say 90% of our clients' issue is not really SAP. SAP works. It's these old systems that they have that they know need to be modernized. And that's where the whole cloud conversation comes in. That's where we start to talk to them about Red Hat and capabilities that we bring to the table to really leverage open source and other capabilities to bring their applications to sort of the modern world. And how do they effectively integrate that stuff with SAP? So that's a big issue that all of our clients encounter. They encounter on the technical side, again, they encounter issues with data. That issue that's been around time immemorial since probably punch cards. Right. And it still exists and it's not going away. Clients have messy data, and they usually use this as an opportunity to start to normalize things and clean things up. Mm-hmm. On the technical side, those are the big things. On the sort of other side of the equation, the big challenges that our clients face are in people, right? They're asking people who might be overworked, who've got day jobs, and they're asking them to take on yet another project. The board has said this is part of our new strategy and how we're going forward. Do you change management and the people and having enough of them with the right skills, that is on everyone's top five list. Mm-hmm. I remember a couple of years ago, we had a customer forum in New York City, and we asked, there were CIOs, CFOs, presidents in the room, and we went around the room and we said, please name your top three challenges that you're facing. The only one that they all had in common was talent. I think that's still true. So I would say that is a big issue for them. And, you know, we help them with that. Obviously, we can provide a measure of relief through our own consultants. But at some point in time, they also need to hire people and bring the right people on board in terms of skills and capabilities.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the best practices for making this work?
Well, number one is understand what's out there. Understand what you can use that's already been created and crafted so you're not starting from scratch. I think that's really important. You know, I think you need to rethink the model. What's ended up happening is clients have implemented systems, including SAP, and it's become very rigid because they've over-engineered and customized the solution. or they've integrated it in a way that's not flexible. So I think you need to have an eye toward what are we looking to achieve, not just in the near term, like in the next year, but over the next 3 to 5 years. Where could this go? What are we going to need? Let's anticipate. We don't know exactly what it is, but what are we going to need to change? So we're not going to customize all of this stuff. We're going to use it out of the box so that when that time comes, we have an opportunity to move fast. A lot of our clients, when they're defining their principles around their projects, will talk about, you know, they talk about zero customization. You know, that's the shining star. I don't know that any of them achieve it, but they say zero. And they start with that, and that just sends a message. They also say, they also put a time frame on it. They say, we're going to get something up and running in a year. Now, in the old days, a year, you know, people would panic. And these days, no. We start with a template. We can get something up in 6 months. Let's go. Let's get it up and running for this part of the business. Let's figure out how it works. Let's get that. You have to understand the change management around this and getting people up to speed and knowledgeable. They may have gone to an SAP class. They may have gotten certified, but until you put your hands on it, you know, you're the client. Until you put your hands on it and you see how it works, you don't really experience it in a way that's, you know, a little bit more profound. So I would suggest that as a best practice, you set timeframes that are very manageable within a year to get something up and running. And you understand. So, and we're doing the same thing here at IBM, by the way, just so you know. Yeah, we're getting ready to go live on our first instance of S4HANA. It's happening next month, and it's within a year.